This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I'm glad you're listening. Thank you for joining us. My name is Andrew Reich. I'm a co-host. I am a writer at placetobenation.com. You can read my articles on placetobenation.com all week long. I've been writing one here, writing one there, but we've been chugging out a lot of these podcasts. You can listen to all of our interviews, and I've got my co-host, Adam Murray. How you doing, Adam?
Doing good. Let's talk some more basketball.
Now, we're going to be talking about basketball, but it's more in the macro, not the micro, right?
Let's talk about the boring part of basketball, then.
Yeah, the ancillary parts, the stuff that nobody gives a crap about until somebody changes a rule, and then everybody remembers it and says, oh, I hate this. Like, they already knew it all along, but they didn't. You know, like, what's one where people like, oh, like the tuck rule. Like, oh, yeah, the tuck rule. I knew that all along. No, you fucking didn't. You know, it's like nobody knew the tuck rule until some idiot bookworm in the freaking NFL library came out with a big handout saying, oh, no, no, no. So to go in line with that, we're doing one podcast today, and this is going to be titled Making All the Rules. And this one's going to be about looking at the league as a whole. Obviously, Adam and I love the National Basketball Association. They do so many things right, especially better than college. College seems to, like, do everything wrong. The NBA over the last 10 years has either tweaked their rules to make everything flow well, or everything pretty much goes as well as it can be. But there are some definite things that you and I feel need to be tweaked a little bit, right?
There's always room for improvement.
You know, it doesn't need, like, massive improvement, but there's
the model for the 1980s no longer worked, in the 90s that no longer works. So every few years you have to adjust with modern times, and NBA is usually ahead of the curve
most of the time,
as opposed to, like, you know, baseball. It's like, well, what's this replay? We're not doing that.
I'll tell you one thing where the NBA was definitely ahead, and I got to give David Stern credit, is that he saw that business model of superstars as the focus of your league, not the teams. Because franchises are great, but what happens if a team turns on a franchise? People just aren't going to pay attention to any players on the team, regardless of how good or how famous they are. And I think the idea of having superstars and relying on them to be the focus of the league and for them to carry the business end was a much better idea than what, say, Major League Baseball is doing.
Well, they do that, but that also comes through the rules and the bird rights, and they tweak the rules as they go to keep things sort of how they want it.
Yeah, modernize it every now and then. I think the NBA has done a good job of keeping that in line. And in that train of thought, we're going to start with the rules of the actual game, on-court play, you know, things that on the court actually matter in terms of what the rules are, what we like, what we don't like. And there's a few things in there, because there was actually during All-Star Weekend in New Orleans, Rod Thorne, who is now an executive member for the NBA under Adam Silver, he had an interesting press conference in which he had pitched a few ideas that they were listening to that people thought were so outside the box that people were almost aghasted at some of these ideas. I'm going to throw some of them out there at Adam right now. What about the idea of a four-point line from about 30 or 35 feet?
No, I don't see that happening. Now we're just getting too much, what was it, rock and jock? And
yeah, the money shot.
Are they going to start having, like, a second hoop the money that's 30 foot up? It's a 25-pointer, and you're going to bring in trampolines, and I can see them moving the three-point line back a foot or two again, like they did, but I don't see the need for a four-point shot.
Yeah, the four-point shot would be one. I think they had a diagram of it. It would not – obviously, it can't go to the corner. If it went to the corner, literally people would, like, have, like, little stilts on their tippy toes of their shoes, and they would, like, be just dangling on that sideline trying to get to the four-point line to drill it. So, obviously, it would have to stop on the sideline, and it would have to go to, like, 40 feet or something. But it was an idea that they just mentioned in passing, but I think that I think Rod Thorne just didn't take his Namenda that day because he seemed to be off his rockers. I just don't see that. I think that's impossible.
I agree.
The 3-point line one you were talking about, I actually do like. Now the 3-pointer, it's used more often as a weapon. It's become more. It's not a specialty anymore. It's not the most. People used to think, Adam, that in the 80s and in the early 90s that the 3-pointer was like a dangerous shot, where it's like it's the toughest shot, and people would only take it if they were desperate. Now it's almost become one of the easiest shots for superstars. Look at the FIBA World Cup. I mean, those guys lived off of the 3-pointer.
Well, that's all they've done. That's all the Euro players do is shoot threes.
Mm-hmm. Threes and dunks and free throws. I mean, that's how it is. That's the NBA offense these days, and it's as much as people who love San Antonio want to talk about harmony and melodic basketball, the truth is, at the end of the day, most of these offenses are built around creating easy baskets with stretching out to the 3-point line, getting easy layups, or attacking, you know, off the ball defenders and get to the free throw line.
Well, the three point resurgence only because they allowed a zone defense.
Mm-hmm.
All right, there's too many people in the lane just sitting there. Okay, well, go out, shoot a three.
Just to clarify what Adam was saying, there used to be a rule in the 80s and in the 90s called illegal defense, and what it was that you were not allowed, in essence, you were not allowed to defend, to double team a player that did not have the ball. You couldn't just leave your man blatantly to double team a man before he received the ball. So you're basically forced to play man-to-man defense until the ball got to a certain player, and then you could surround him to try to get the ball out of his hands. But they took that away in 2002. Everybody plays zone defense, not necessarily like a zone like Jim Boeheim 2-3 zone, but they surround, they like to double team and attack, and they like to go off of pick and rolls and trap people, and they do that a lot more now than they used to. But the idea of it is that it opened up the 3-point line a lot more and the 3-point shot a lot more, because when you double team, it leaves someone open.
Exactly. That's why now we have the talk of how do we change it. All everyone's doing is shooting threes.
Well, in 95, they changed it from 23 feet 9 inches, and they went actually forwards. They went to 22 feet. And that year, Dennis Scott broke the record for the most threes in a season. It didn't help with scoring, obviously, because of the fact that the root of the problem with scoring in the NBA in the 90s was not the 3-point shot or anything like that. I think it was a combination of not a lot of talent in the league, and the game was just way too physical. And oh, go ahead.
It was a different type of league. Those players were a lot slower. Back then, they didn't have people like Amare Stoudemire as a center who's running the court like a point guard.
And every game would turn into a rock fight.
Yeah.
You know, and so they actually, in 98, they went back to 23 feet 9 inches. What would you say would be far enough, though, if we pushed it back? Because I actually like that idea. Would you go like to 25 feet?
Yeah, push it back another foot. Does
College
it really
went backwards?
Yeah, they want. Does it change a lot? No, but it could. The thing is now everybody shoot. You know, they're now getting multiple shooters who are all shooting 40% threes. That was very rare back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Now everybody can shoot threes lights out pretty much. So,
and not only that, with the volume increasing, when you see these 3-point percentages, it kind of scares you.
Yeah. So just, you know, if you push it back another foot. Okay, it might create more. I don't know. It's just we're just talking suggestions and hypotheticals. Would it improve the game? Would it make it worse? I don't know.
Yeah, this is the measures of the game, and we're thinking of ideas to expand on that if it actually came to be. What about instant replay? Do you think it's overused?
The refs use it as a crutch sometimes too much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they need to check it over and over and over. Replay is getting better as opposed to let's go check it. Let's have somebody, a dedicated guy watching it. We just call up to him. He knows what it's going to be. Because that would just – it was like, you know, you watch the playoffs. Every other play would be under review.
Well, in the NFL, they do it too.
Well, the NFL is speeding it up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all part of the technology. Okay, technology is getting better. We now know what works, what doesn't work. I have no problem with the replays. It's just – don't slow the game down because of it.
But don't do it like college football and college basketball did, where everything is reviewed and it just becomes such a grind. It's like, please stop reviewing everything, because everything's a booth review. So, well, you know, yeah, they decide what they want to look at.
with basketball, thankfully they changed it to they will only be done in, with the exception of the last few minutes, it'll only be done in commercial breaks. I'm like, that's smart. Mm-hmm. Keeps the flow going. And once you start killing the flow, nobody wants to do it. You're going to lose, you lose the viewers, people there no longer care. It's just a pain all around to slow the game down with. You don't want, you want the players to play, not the refs to take it over.
No, and the idea of replay is putting the game into the referee's hands even more. So you're sort of defeating the purpose by implementing more instant replay. That's the contradictory effect of the whole thing.
Yeah, but you get that everybody gets like 10 more timeouts per game now.
I've heard this one before. What about raising the basket?
No.
Because of the athleticism.
No,
I mean, Andre Drummond, yeah, that's a good example. I was about to say someone else, but that's a good one. And DeAndre Jordan. I mean, they literally, Adam, they're centers, and they literally have, like, their entire neck above the fucking rim.
Yeah, but are they really dominating? Are they really causing, you know, like
when Blake Griffin is.
Blake, yes, but he is super athletic. But it's not like when they first started dunking, oh my god, the game's totally different. No, they're not dominating. They're not becoming super all-stars because of this. I don't see raising the rim would do anything, because that would just, that would essentially ruin the league, because everybody who shoots has their touch. If you raise the rim even an inch, now your shot is completely off.
Okay, that one, I'm definitely with you. What about this one? And we see this in FIBA play and in Olympic play, and actually a lot of people really like it. They like the fact that it doesn't stop the actual on-ball play, and I actually would agree with it if they did it. The idea of eliminating basket interference around the cylinder. Basically playing ping pong ball with the ball around the rim.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. You know why they're scared? They're scared that that's going to eliminate baskets, and it's going to bring scoring down.
And just create more of a scrum than anything else.
But the great thing is that if you scrum it, guess what you get? Leakouts for fast breaks.
Well, you get that. And also, now your team, are you going to be a shooting team small ball? Or do you just want to play all big guys who are just going to cherry pick off the rim?
Mm-hmm.
It does bring more strategy. I'm a fan of it.
If we had that rule back, if we eliminated that interference rule, who would be like the best like rim swatter? Who would be the best one?
Currently?
Yeah, like give me one guy who you would think like, oh, that I would bring that guy in just to swat away balls off the rim.
Oh, can we bring Dikembe Mutombo back? You know, since according to you, half the players have their heads already through the hoops.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what would be interesting about that is that if you touch the net, that's basket interference. And even though some people say that does hurt the shot, I never really thought of it that way. So
I didn't either. But
if you want to if you want to get rid of the idea that interfering with the net is goaltending, I would be fine with that too.
Well, it would bring specialty players in, people who have no other talent than jumping.
Junkyard like, dogs.
Yeah, like Anthony Randolph or a Stromile Swiftback.
Remember Jerome Williams?
Jerome the Junkyard Dog Williams. Mm-hmm. Who's the last LSU player I'm thinking of who had no talent?
Tyrus Thomas. Anthony Randolph. I got a few more.
I mentioned Randolph and Stromile.
Mm-hmm.
All they could do is jump, and that was it. Mm-hmm. That'll bring their skill set in, and I don't think it's a bad thing.
If
it works in international, there's no reason it can't work here.
That one we're going to definitely put there. I think that's a good idea. The court has always been this way, 94 feet long, 50 feet wide. What do you think of the idea? And this one I actually thought about and I actually like a little bit. What do you think of expanding the baseline by more than 50 feet so you give them more room for corner threes?
That will never happen.
Why not?
Two reasons. One reason, money. You have people paying for courtside seats. You are not going to take away revenue from the team. Like, you notice you now have the players' bench are now moved in the corner because you want to get more seats on the courtside. So they're not going to take away seats and take away prime $10,000 seats.
PDLs, you mean?
Yeah, mm-hmm. PSL.
Well, PSL, yeah, I messed it up. PSL is the luxury suites, right?
PSL is a personal seat license where you can get more money just to say you have a season ticket.
But would that still be considered a courtside seat?
But now you've let's say you take away a whole row of courtside seats. Where are you going to move those and get your revenue back? The owners will never agree to that because.
So this is a case where a rule change would directly affect the business end.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So that one, not the best. This one we talked about in depth, but do you like the idea? What about the idea of putting back in illegal defense?
I don't know.
Let's be honest, the league has gotten way too shot happy, and that would actually encourage more penetration.
It would, but now then you're going to eliminate the zone altogether, and
because there was illegal defense in the 80s, and teams were still scoring like the Dickens.
Yeah, but that was also a lot of more fast break ball, and but you bring it back, but you can't bring it back in the same form. It would have to be tweaked somehow.
Yeah, but that would be such a great line. Like, well, what is a hard double team off the ball? You know, it's hard to define that, you know, because there was such thing as actually an illegal offense, which now they've implemented it. Now they call it flat in the court, where you got like four guys and you go across the board and then you let your superstar go to work on one-on-one. And, in the 80s with Michael Jordan, Doug Collins put in an offense where basically he would have all four players in one place, and then Michael would go to work. And they actually called it illegal offense. Now, nobody does this, and that's why it's never called. And that's why the rule is almost outdated. But do you think you could see something where offense could actually become more creative if they put back in illegal defense?
It would get more creative, but it would be a slow rule change. You can't. You know, it's like now with NFL, with this new illegal contact, we're calling it all the time. Players will take a while to sort of develop new strategies for it, I think.
Now, we both like the hand check rule. But do you think that it's gotten to a point where you literally can't get away with anything if you're on an island with a point guard?
Yeah, it's become sort of one of those really ticky-tack fouls now where it's just like, okay, you're calling it way too much. And
that's why they're in love with high ball screens.
Yeah, it's a good rule in theory. However, the refs just sort of like, oh, we're going to – this will show us we're in control by doing ticky-tack fouls. And now my top five point guard needs to sit down because he has two little bullshit fouls.
What about speeding up the time between free throws? I believe it's 10 seconds or maybe 12. I can't remember.
It's 10, but it's not really enforced.
It should be, though.
But most players get it off in a fair amount of time. There's only
Tim Duncan.
Tim Duncan, Jason Kidd with his whole kissing.
Howard.
Well, he could take a half hour. He still won't hit him.
You remember that one where he did it on purpose just to show off to the ref?
Yeah.
Remember, I think that was a Christmas game where he basically held it on purpose. He timed him out and then he threw the ball at the backboard and he got a technical foul. What an asshole. But don't worry, he's a Christian. We both love the clear path foul. College should do it right away. I don't know why. NCAA is so freaking dumb. They try to change all these rules to get scoring better, but they don't change the things that actually matter. And one of them is the clear path. We both like that. Clear path is, to explain it, is one where the guard goes to the half court, and if there's not a defender behind the other defender, if you foul the guard and you basically prevent him from going to the basket, it's an automatic free throw. You can't get away from it.
Yeah, it's you can't block a free. You can't just play from behind and then tackle them.
You just have to pray there's another a secondary defender.
Yeah, college have enough problems with it. NCAA also, unfortunately, has to deal with like a lot of the football headaches, so basketball rules are, you know, it has to go through lots of different levels. It's not just here's the basketball division, here's your rule. No, it has to go through many other people who are like, but I'm the field hockey guy, why am I voting on this? It's...
The one thing I hate, and Chris Paul does this a lot, and it actually cost him in the playoffs, is hoisting the ball up on a clear path, trying to get an easy 3-point play when all you were doing was just hoisting up the shot when you got fouled.
Yeah, but
I hate that.
That's the refs bailing you out.
Well, they didn't bail out Chris Paul, and it cost him.
Well, yeah, but that's when you start relying on that too much.
This one is closely tied to the business end with the sideline, like we were talking about with the baseline. is there any way to try to keep the fans a little bit farther away from the court, especially the ones who get over-involved?
How many of those are there, really?
There's one. There's about five a year, to be honest with you.
But in the NBA, is you rarely hear that because those are usually just corporate guys who have those seats. And
do you like the raised courts?
I'm fairly indifferent on it. Mm-hmm. Does it make it better? Does it make it worse? I don't know. I don't know if it's safe for them if they start diving off into the court with all those.
It'd be like the old stage on Raw when they would just be jumping into a table or something.
Yeah, basically the old ECW arena where there's just miscellaneous tables all around.
In college in the domed arenas, Adam, it's unbelievable. Like the distance between the bench and the timekeeper's table, it's like. Jesus,
what is it, Vanderbilt, where it's just them on, like, a stage and nobody's
there? Well, that's a gimmick that they've had forever, where the baseline, the baseline is the court side.
But the NBA, like, they're not going to move fans away. I think more of moving the media away.
I agree.
Having the, you know, the cameramen's feet are all over it, and...
Now, they've actually... Recently, they've listened to us in that case because they've actually changed that recently because of the Paul George injury in the USA Basketball Showcase, where it wasn't the media's fault. They just wanted to push the media back to try to prevent those incidents.
Well, yeah, they have a line they have to stay behind, and they usually do it. And but, you know, is there a need these days to have so much media there? And it's funny, like, you're watching... All the media press, the press table behind them is now super small, and they're getting moved up to the seats because now that's prime real estate for more paid tickets.
I'll throw you one more, but this one is really ambiguous, and I don't know how you could even enforce it, even though they've been doing it more and more. Excessive fines and suspensions for flopping.
I don't know how they enforce it.
They're trying, but they're not doing a great job of it, I say.
They're not doing a great job, but it's just more of that awareness type thing. It's like, okay, don't flop. Don't make it blatant.
Yeah, it's like when they do the rules changes in the beginning, and they're like, oh, you see where what do they call it? Point of emphasis, where they say, like, oh, we're emphasizing this, but by the end of the year, no one cares.
Well, at the end of the year, it's just like, okay, make a basketball play before flopping. Just don't, like, somebody breathes on you. Up, he dove 10 feet.
You get warned these days, and then you get fined for the second or third violation. I don't know if anyone's ever – it's not like a flagrant foul where after so many you get suspended, where it turns into – that's why that works. That's where I think flopping could help, where if you flop too much, then you get suspended. And – I would hate to see any player lose a game check because they flop too much, but, you know, because the coach asks you to flop. That's what they tell you to do, take charges.
Yeah, there's a difference between taking a charge and then act like you got shot by a bullet.
Yeah, and then punching a guy pretty much right in the jaw on a fast break.
Yeah, there's a difference. Like, flopping's still always going to happen, but you have to – don't make it be blatantly bad.
Mm-hmm.
They make it stricter? I don't know. It's not gonna. You can't check them as the game happens because it's so fast.
Yeah. If we did it this way, in the rules this way, I think we've said this before, especially with the flopping rules that they have, that they've been trying to do more of. Bruce Bowen, I don't even know if he would get on the court.
No, he really wouldn't, or his game would be severely limited because of it.
So does that change the perception of an elite defender in the NBA?
No, because that's the way it was played at the time. The same way of baseball, you can only say, okay, now is the steroid era. Back in the 50s was the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
You can only take it as it was the players you played against.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and go to the schedule portion of the rule changes that we've been looking at. And this one is actually a little bit more realistic than the actual on-the-court stuff. The on-the-court stuff, you have to go through 25 million different type of rule committees in order to get the thing done in the first place or even looked at. With the schedule, that's very, very easily subject to change because they've already announced that they have a new television contract with ESPN and TNT going forward where their rights fees have basically, like, tripled in price. And so everything is going to be moving up. There's more money at stake, and you want to create more of a TV viewer-friendly product. So it's going to be obvious that they're going to do more with the schedule in terms of tinkering it for national audiences. And we're going to give them a few ideas, and this is the first one I thought about. And Adam Silver seriously considering it, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did it this year. What do you think of moving the NBA draft to the middle portion or the late portion of the month of July?
Number one, does anybody really care when the draft is? It's not like the NFL where everybody's clamoring for it.
No, but I think it's important in this case is that you can have the draft after the free agency sessions.
You can, but again, then move up free agency. It's really, the NBA draft isn't the be all and end all sort of like NFL is. There's no other, NFL is sort of in a league of its own. No pun intended.
Yeah, but the NBA draft is still event programming in a way.
It's event programming, but you're not going to get, you know, franchise-changing people like you would in the NFL. People who are like, oh, they're going to be an all-star off the gate. NBA, it's just sort of a lot of... Would it be better to make it sort of coincide with free agency a little bit?
It's one night. The NFL is 4 nights.
The NFL is just out of hand with that, but with the NBA... You've now killed the summer leagues. If you move the NBA, if you move the draft to late July, the summer league will be in sort of August when we're already in training camp.
Yeah, but the summer leagues are pretty quick anyway. They only last about 3 weeks.
They last a few weeks, but that's how you sort of fill out your rosters is with these people. And I don't see it as an important thing to when the draft is.
So you think it wouldn't change the strategy of a lot of these GMs if they had their free agency in mind because they already know who they want to sign?
Yeah, their free agents are – it's more of a free agency issue as opposed to a draft issue.
What I hate about the draft, though, is that it basically shows the hand of all these kind of conspirators about, oh, look at what they're doing. They're obviously trading this pick because they want to sign this superstar and they think they have a promise.
Well, yeah, the NBA draft would sort of be meaningless that way. Like, oh, they just signed so and so to a max deal. Therefore, who wants our pick? And you just sort of have way more. Like, I think there's way too much. The one thing I would change about the NBA draft is announce trades before they happen. Let's not announce the trade that happened 2 hours beforehand. Everybody knew that was going to happen.
I agree with that one.
That's the one thing I would change with the draft. All right, everybody, even the players know, all right, you're wearing this Milwaukee hat.
I remember when Pau Gasol was wearing the Hawks hat. I'm like, no, you're going to the Grizzlies, dude.
Yeah, everybody already know that is going to happen. Announce it then.
Now, Wiggins was different because that was like a conspiracy higher class.
Well, he could have really gone anywhere, really. He could have gone to couple of teams, I think, just based on, but you know, just wearing the other hat, I think it would cause more drama if you announced these real time trades.
Okay, so you don't like that idea of trying to push the NBA draft at a later date to try to isolate it as more of a major event, give it more hype. I get that. What about copying what the NFL does with NFL honors, which is they used to do their awards where they would do it like the NBA does now. They would divvy out the awards during the weekday, during either the end of the regular season or during the NFL playoffs. And then they would have a press conference and the player would probably just lift up the trophy at a ceremony or whatever. And what they did now is that they've bundled up all of the awards kind of like an Oscar ceremony the night before the Super Bowl where, you know, this guy wins MVP, this guy wins Rookie of the Year, and it's almost like a red carpet deal. Do you like the idea of doing an NBA honors type ceremony before the NBA finals?
How many surprises have there really been in these NBA awards?
In the NBA awards, not many, because the MVP races get to a
MVP
consensus.
Race, you know who's going to – it's well, really consensus.
This
same
is what
thing
I'm
with,
saying. They get to a consensus point with these writers where it becomes gang mentality, and you already know who's going to win, even if you don't like who's going to win. Steve Nash, for example.
You know, there's no way to, oh, let's celebrate who's the third team all-NBA rookies. Is there a way to make the awards show better or have people care about the awards? I don't know, but to me, they're just sort of a statistic point, and I don't I don't even know if the awards are televised.
I think the way it would be funner is if you had the MVP winner and he happens to be in the finals, and it would give him that idea, oh, he's a freshly minted MVP, and, you know, he's trying to prove that he was the MVP. It would be fresher in people's minds going into the finals if you want to create that storyline. But that's one of those things where things have to work out exactly right. The guy who wins MVP would have to get to the finals.
Yeah, and if you're going to be in the finals, you're not going to be spending your time at award shows. And,
that's true.
You know, in theory, LeBron's going to win all these awards. Well, he's busy resting for his big game tomorrow. He's not going to sit there and eat the buffet style catering and have his big party afterwards.
Okay. Do you like the fact that they got away from the 2-3-2 format in the NBA Finals?
Yes.
You hated it?
No, I love the 2-3-2.
Oh, so you want it to go back to...
Wait.
No, this is what happened. They disbanded 2-3-2, and now it's 2-2-1-1-1 like the rest.
Oh, yes. I was completely thinking the opposite of what you said instead of actually listening to you.
I'm used to that.
The 2-3-2 I thought was really stupid and made no sense.
You know I called it? I called it the island format, where if you lost a game at home, you were stuck. You had to win out of on the road, or you were...
They used to do that because travel was so difficult back in the day, and we times have changed.
You know why, Adam? Because the rivals at the time were Boston and L.A. and Detroit and L.A. and nobody wanted to travel back and forth like that.
Yeah, no, it's I'm glad. I am not a fan of the 2-3-2, nor do I know many people who defend the 2-3-2 as being good.
I here's the thing, though, and this is where I think people got it wrong when they made the rule change. A lot of people are trying to make it out like it's such a drastic change in terms of destiny for a lot of these teams in the past had they gone to 2-2-1-1. I don't believe that. I think that the best teams won anyway, and they were going to win no matter what. In fact, a lot of series probably would have ended sooner had you done the 2-2-1-1-1.
Yeah, nowadays people are used to playing 4 games in 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot different now. Thankfully, it's gone.
Yeah, I mean, for example, Miami got crushed in the first 2 games at home. What if they did a 5th game? I mean, is it less likely that the Spurs would have won Game 5 if they had to play another game in Miami again? No one knows that, you know?
Yeah, once you start playing the what-if games, you just get lost or delusional.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, this would have been totally different. Like, dude, it's... What happened, happened.
Yeah, but sadly, delusional and NBA fan they go hand in hand a lot. What about a 1 week break during the All-Star weekend? That is actually one that's in play.
Why not?
I'm going to add this. What about this idea of having a EuroLeague style tournament where you have like 4 teams in a different country playing 2 games during the All-Star week?
So having regular season games go on elsewhere?
I think so, yes. I think the idea is to have...
How are you going to know who's in the All-Star game? You can't have players putting 2 people in and, right now, Cleveland, you're scheduled to play in Italy, but your 3 best guys are on the All-Star game, so they're not going.
Well, maybe they just won't play and they are exhibitions. I don't know.
See, that's the thing, is now you're just getting too complicated. If you have a week off... See, the problem with the All-Star weekend, it became really irrelevant because the players could care less during the All-Star game itself.
Well, let's make this point. The All-Star game in the NBA is the funnest of all the All-Star games.
Yes, that is. It's the funnest, and if you want to give them a week off, sure. I'm all for giving everybody a rest to make this more of a more important, bring the importance back to it, but to have half teams playing elsewhere... The NBA brand is pretty strong international, unlike the delusional NFL, which is still trying to force a team into London for no reason.
But do you think they would be forcing the issue on the international basis too much if they try to do something like this, where say they do like a 2-day elimination in like Brazil or China?
No, because again, you don't know who's been playing, who's not going to be playing, who can make it, who can't make it. And also, I like what NBA is doing now by having preseason games in Europe.
Yeah.
And sending good teams out by having...
And playing good EuroLeague teams, like Olympiacos.
Yes, exactly. Not by saying, again, you know, another dig on the NFL. Oh, you guys will love the NFL. Here's Jacksonville.
That London stuff is such a... I don't want to call it a failure because they're still making money from the Wembley gates, but I just never liked that idea because they're never going to go to London.
They're just trying to force it in. But the NBA, they're, you know, you're sending out your full team. You're sending out the Celtics powerhouses to play, you know, Maccabi and Roma and Real Madrid. You're bringing good teams with you, and that's how you promote the brand, and you're doing it in preseason games. Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
But to have people travel over for a week and travel back, I think might be a little much.
Yeah, especially during All-Star, especially when you have the trade deadline coming up and you don't know who's being moved and who's not. So that makes it even more of a mess.
It's a super long plane ride back. Hey, I'm sorry, you got traded. Oh, I know you're in Italy.
Hey,
do you
want to hang out with what the hell is that new Australian rapper? What's her name? I'm totally forgetting her name. I can't believe it.
Iggy Azalea?
Yeah. Do you want to hang out with Iggy Azalea and look at her big ass while you're dancing in the clubs, or do you want to go to China?
Oh, sorry guys, you're playing in Russia for this. Russia in February. Good luck. Go enjoy Cheska Moscow.
Some of them wind up in Russia anyway, but that's because the NBA didn't want them anyway. This one I am impassioned about, and I've been saying it for years, and when the lockout happened, I said it was a blessing in disguise. And the fact is, they started that season on Christmas Day, and even though the season was abridged, they smushed too many games and made a lot of players play back-to-back-to-backs, three games of three nights, and it sort of devalued the product a little bit because a lot of players had to sit in order to avoid fatigue, and I get that completely. We're all human. But I will say this. I thought the idea of having the NBA on Christmas Day was so cool, and I thought it gave it that tip-off, that little special feel to it that I don't really get even on a week like Halloween, where it just feels like the NBA has its own week, I guess, but it doesn't feel special. By the end of the week, it just doesn't feel like anything that stood out. So here's my idea. I think the NBA season is too long anyway. And I know we've had 82 regular season games since like the early 1970s or the 1960s. I get that. It'd be a slap in the face of tradition. But I say this. I say they do a 70-game season and they start on Thanksgiving.
Never will happen.
But do you think that's a good idea?
I can't say it is because look at baseball. Everyone knows baseball has too many games. You see every stadium on a weekday is like a third filled. Owners are not going to give up money. They're not going to give away five games.
The same reason why they'll never get rid of NFL preseason games.
Exactly. The owners are not going to sign off on it because you're now giving away money for no reason. Would it make the product better if you shorten the season? It would make it more competitive, but the bad teams are still going to be bad. The good teams will still be good.
But the tanking would not be as indiscreet. It wouldn't be so obvious.
I wouldn't say shortening the season, just sort of make them more strategic. Because now players, everybody has random three games in 4 days. Here's a back-to-back here. If you just sort of had set days for games, people could get excited for it, like NFL. If they're just randomly thrown about, like hockey has sort of made their niche by being the Saturday night sport. All our major games are on Saturdays. They're here. If NBA sort of said, okay, we're going to just do most of our games here, here, and here, players then could rest. You don't have random, back-to-backs.
Yeah, like I'm flying – I'm here in Philly, and then I'm flying to Miami.
Yeah, because it's the way the scheduling goes. If they sort of paste it where it's even and games are sort of these days, like you have an A schedule and a B schedule. Because I know with the national NBA, you'll need a game on Tuesday for ESPN. You need a game on Thursday for TNT.
Yeah, and those packages are going to expand even more now with the TV contract. So expect more nights to be added in the future.
Yeah, so if they sort of said, if you're going to be on TNT this week, here's your schedule for the week. You have designated days off, and it's just sort of not random.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's funny. Like, for example, like, I was looking at the Celtics schedule this year. Mm-hmm. They do not have one home game on a Saturday all year, I believe.
Well, for the Celtics fans, that's actually not a bad thing.
It's just a strange... I have tickets to a lot of games this year. I just found it very odd. That is all.
Mm-hmm. So I like it. I'm not trying to say I do think the 82 game season is too long and it is too many. That's why I think shrinking it and starting the season later is a good idea. If you want to do it with like 76 games and start it at the same time and give them a little more rest in between, and then give them that all-star break for a week, I'm cool with that too. Because I just think 82 games is a stretch where once you get to the last 12 games of the season, if you're not in playoff contention, I mean, those games are worthless for both the top teams and the bottom teams.
Yeah, but what league doesn't have too many games?
And it's I get the ticket sales. I know that you're still going to get asses in the seats for those games.
You're just giving away money, and the owners are not... The owners are not going to give away money, and every, you know, the same thing could be said about every sport. How would it be better? Oh, well, if you cut out 10 games, people might care more. Yeah, but the owners are like, well, so we're going to give up tens of millions of dollars to do this? No.
Well, that's a good segue, because we're going to talk money, 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 money. And that's the business part. I promise I'll never do that again.
Thank you.
And let's just talk about – we could talk about a couple of different varieties with the business portion of the NBA. I want to start with free agency because this is one that I've had a problem with for quite a while, and I know why they did it because of the fact that rookies were brokering their own contracts for different lengths of time before they were even suiting up for games. But I do not like the idea of restricted free agency. I never did, and I actually like the idea that rookies could just – explore their options after year four.
You are combining 2 points there, rookies and then 4-year free agency, huh?
Well,
restrict one.
But restricted free agency directly tied to rookies.
Restricted free agency was just essentially we need to keep players in these small market towns. We can't just say everybody's going to go to LA after 4 years or New York. We need to keep somebody in Milwaukee. I like how they've shortened it. I don't, you know, it was like, oh, you could wait 2 weeks till they sign it. No, it should be a day or two.
Yeah. Well, let me clarify. The rookie scale I like. That had to be done. What I don't like is the fact that once the rookie scale is at its fourth year, the player is either stuck in restricted free agency, sort of like Eric Bledsoe was, or you're in a position where the negotiating side, the leverage is on the team side, and you're almost in jail to have to agree to an extension, because even if somebody gives you a high offer on an offer sheet, your original team's going to match it anyway. And I just don't like the fact that they don't give those options back to the players.
Well, I got no problem with that. Most players don't care. If somebody was going to give them $60 million, they won't care whether they're playing in Alaska or they're playing in Miami.
They're going to take the money.
Yeah, exactly. They don't – O.J. Mayo went to Milwaukee only because they paid him the most. Same thing with Al Jefferson.
You know what started all this? Shaq in 96.
Shaq and then Kevin Garnett.
Yeah, but Garnett got the extension he wanted with the original team, but he brokered a huge contract.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, I have no problem with the team saying, we'll keep you. It's just now the teams are now screwing the players because of it. Kawhi Leonard, okay, he's going to get a max contract. Now the Spurs are saying they didn't offer him one because they want to see how their cap room goes. So now they're sort of holding him hostage. Mm-hmm. And a lot of teams are sort of doing that. And the whole let's wait and see approach. I'm for the teams. If somebody's going to sign them, it's sort of, I don't know, like the NFL, I kind of like it where you have to sort of owe them a pick for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, would you rather have an extra first-round pick?
Yeah, but the picks in the NFL draft are more valuable because of how valuable they are in the second and third rounds, whereas a second-round pick in the NBA don't mean really anything.
Well, now it's sort of changed because now you're just a cheap player.
Mm-hmm.
You're a cheap, serviceable player as opposed to...
Because everybody's trying to gather up these superstar cabals, and you have to take minimum salaries.
Yeah, So that's a perfect way to get a nice player in super cheap who's good. Look at Chandler Parsons before, you know, when he opted out, he was just a, you know, under $1 million a year, putting up major points as a second round pick. Same thing with Gilbert Arenas. But I like that more than just getting rid of altogether, because now you'll just have teams who are just getting poached. Yeah. Sort of like, you know, baseball with Tampa Bay, they can't afford to keep any player. Milwaukee can't afford to pay like anybody a max contract because they're a tiny market team. So if somebody's just going to say, all right, I'll overpay them.
But you say that, but they just made $550 million on a sale.
Yeah, but you need to now get fans to come in. All because the owner is paid for it doesn't mean the fans are going to follow. Look at Florida teams. They always have trouble bringing in because people just don't care.
Absolutely.
I'm sort of more of rewarding somebody with compensatory picks as opposed to – you can't just let people go for nothing. And you just – that's what would happen is the players will all be like, I'm going to go here because they're the first one to offer me a contract. Well, if the other team's going to pay him.
So like the Chandler Parsons thing, instead they would get draft picks in return from Dallas.
Yeah, or they get a draft pick. I think that they – why not?
I would say to that – that if a player is good enough, like if a player really ascends by year three, just don't shackle him to the point where he's almost forced to have to sign max extension.
Like, well, that's the thing now is, like I said, teams are sort of holding it hostage.
Kawhi Leonard's in that situation now.
Yeah, that's why I just mentioned is the teams are sort of using it against the players now, whereas it was a good rule at first to say let the market decide this player's value, but now, well, he's not gonna, the team's gonna sign him anyways, and you just, Eric Bledsoe is just sitting there waiting. Okay, Minnesota finally bit. Now, okay, they've re-signed because the market was set, but now they're just sort of waiting for it, and you have, what's his name in Detroit? Andre Drummond.
Greg Monroe, right?
Greg Monroe. Yeah. I had a 50-50 shot. And I
you always have a 50-50 shot with those two.
And I always picked the wrong one. Yeah, so he was like...
He was in jail, basically.
Yeah. He was in jail because Detroit, you know, well,
he
Detroit's
was in jail because he got arrested.
Detroit's going to match any reasonable offer. So we just, why are we going to hold up our finances for 3 days and have a Houston situation where you just have to panic, trade away people and do all this? So I'm like, it should be an instant. Like, if you know you're going to re-sign them, it should be one day tops. You should have, you know, 24 to 48 hours. 48 hours to match. That's it.
So you want restricted free agency to actually be more restrictive?
No, to be less restricted, because that way players – because when if you're signing somebody – you know, when Charlotte signed Gordon Hayward, both teams were in limbo for 3 days. Well, are they going to sign? Aren't they? Charlotte can't do anything because if he signs, you can't go sign anybody else. So other free agents are getting snatched up because you're waiting on to see what Utah does.
Okay, this one's been a development from the newest collective bargaining agreement from 2011. I like it. The super luxury tax, where you have to pay triple your costs after you go well over a certain threshold. I like it. Do you like it?
Yes and no, because it's just going to go away with these with this new TV agreement.
Then what would you do? Relax it so that owners can overpay without having to pay more?
I don't know how you'll change it. It's a good deal to sort of punish the teams, but now you're just getting – now you're just – that's just a way to restrict – you're not paying the players now because you don't want to pay the tax. I get it. You don't want to go too over, but I don't. It's a very murky situation. I like it. It's great. It's not like a baseball thing where you have the Yankees who are spending $200 million every year,
and everybody gets $10 million a year regardless, and they still make money.
Yeah, you're now punishing it. I don't see it how it's going to work with this new. With this new TV deal.
Well, that's
in.
The thing. Like you're saying, it might be a moot point anyway, because by that time, all the existing salaries will be considered bargains, and then you have to reset the salaries, and everybody is going to be able to get all these players under contract anyway.
Exactly.
So it's kind of a double-edged sword there, so I totally get that. Here's a couple. I'll take one from the hockey example, and I'll take one from the football example. This one from the NHL. What do you think about disbanding the contract length limit and having one of those contracts where it dissipates to very low minimum salaries over the course of maybe 10 years?
Declining?
Yeah, kind of like a Magic Johnson salary.
I don't know
when
if
you
that'll
when sign
work,
like a 20-year deal.
Then you're just you're now people will get players who are just it's I don't know how it'll work cap wise.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing I could say.
It could be sort of an amnesty situation where the last 5 years don't have to go on the cap.
You know, okay, now you're just sort of skirting around with it. Well, we'll pay him $25 million the first year. But in the end, cap-wise, you know, with these anomalous contracts like Lynn
mm-hmm.
and
Eric Gordon,
you know, it all averaged out in the end.
Mm-hmm. That's where I wanted to get to. What about the NFL-type deals where you basically get rid of later season guarantees and it's easier to conduct buyouts in later years? Front-load the deals.
Front-loading the deals are—they sort of do that now, but—
But the guaranteed money is much much more ironclad in the NBA.
Yeah, well, they already have some de-escalating contracts that sort of go from 12 to 11 million, just go and you know don't have the raises in them. But to have non-guaranteed deals, that's just sort of the players will never agree to that for one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the players just won't agree, and then you're just going to have people getting, oh, well, here's a $200 million deal, first 2 years guaranteed only, and it's just like NFL. Oh, here's crazy numbers. Nobody actually makes that.
Do you think the 4 year to 5 year max is too short, though?
No. That's what the players want, because if you have a 7 year contract, you're now shackled in, and the team is also screwed if you start.
But that doesn't happen if you front load the deal, though.
Yeah, but how do you? You're just going to have players. It's just going to be for caps. You know, like, oh, okay, I'm going to sign him for $80 million, $40 million the first year. Well, that's your entire team's cap.
Mm.
And it's just going to sort of.
You got to relax the cap rules.
Yeah, that. See, now I'm saying you get my point. You're now creating bigger issues by doing this.
Okay. We were talking a little bit about international. I don't think this will ever happen. I don't really like the idea anyway. I know they want to create more of a partnership with the other countries and make more of that international market because, let's be honest, the basketball is a world sport. They do it really well, much better than football does, probably better than baseball does. But I think the idea of expanding the NBA to a point where we have a regular franchise overseas is a bad idea. So let me give you some countries and see if they could even pass. Canada obviously has one, and we're not going to count them. So let's do this. What about Greece?
No. Any team in Europe already has the EuroLeague.
Okay, Spain and Brazil. Spain That's closer to the United States, so travel's easier.
It's still an 8-hour flight.
Well, do you think the idea of having, because they've been talking about it forever, one of these expansion franchises internationally in, like, say, China, Lithuania, Great Britain, do you think that's anything that even is worth being Avenger?
No, not during the regular season because it's just a logistical nightmare to get anybody anywhere. Brazil is that's like a 10-hour flight with no time change. Like at least when you fly to Europe, you leave at night and you get there in the morning. It's the next day. You fly to Brazil. It's a 10-hour flight. You arrive the same time you left.
And say you have one of these situations where you have to fly through Iceland or you have to fly through Russia. You know, and we already have all these controversies with the air travel there. So you know what, it causes even more problems.
I think what they're doing, there's no need to have a regular season team if you sort of partner with the EuroLeague and sort of make them like a minor league system.
Mm-hmm.
I'm for that, where you can send a player or two over,
mm-hmm.
like sort of like the D-League does, but
kind of like WWF did with ECW in the 90s. Send them down.
Yeah, that was Smoky Mountain, not ECW.
No, well, they did it easy. Vince did it under the table.
Yeah, but that was only like one player. There's like two
guys.
Yeah,
like Al Snow and so what player would probably wind up being like getting thrown there? J.R. Smith, just for representation's sake.
That's the thing now. It's like players are going to China for a year and then coming back. That's like the same thing. If you just it's global, but you need to have like a whole system, like a whole another league out there. Mm-hmm. Like, you need, like, the East Coast, like, the Eastern Division, the Western Division needs all of Europe. You can't have, like, interleague play where somebody's, okay, now this, you know, the Pelicans are now in Europe for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? You can't have, like, a whole
So you're saying keep all the franchises domestic, but have one take a trip to another country for, like, a 3-week excursion?
That, or much like you said during, if they had, like, the All-Star game, like, if you take, like, let's say All-Star game was, like, 2 weeks, the week before that, have a regular season game all over the place to promote the brand. They already do it, like I said, with the preseason, the best, you know, the development international has been wonderful because we just look at Basketball Without Borders. Mm-hmm. You now have Bruno Caboclo coming over. He's a first-round pick from this training camp.
And the EuroLeague Final Four is one of the more watched basketball events in the world.
Yeah, and you're getting these players from, you know, Africa who, without this NBA development, would not have been there, would not be coming over. Mm-hmm. So I think right now the NBA is good in their expand. You don't need to have a regular team there. You just need to sort of promote elsewhere.
I like the D-League, but do you mind the fact that they have multiple affiliates for the same teams?
There's only one team that has 13 affiliates now.
That's
the Fort Wayne Mad Ants,
yes.
Everybody else has a one-team affiliation now. So, and then it's just, you know, you have the teams who have bought into it, then you have the 13 teams like, yeah, we don't care, we have no intention of
But it is working, because you see more affiliates as the years go by, and you see more teams.
It's making sense. You're having players who are it's not like a cast-off where, oh, no, he got sent down to the D-League.
It's not like a dirty word anymore.
Now you're getting all-stars who rehab. So if you get it sort of like a AAA system, I'm a fan of just making the draft 3 rounds, and the third-round pick could go to the D-League.
Well, they used to have, like, 7.
Yeah, but that didn't make sense for a 15-team roster.
I mean, I know a guy at LSU who's, like, friends with my dad. He got picked.
Yeah, all right. You know, if you have too many rounds, there's not – but if you gave a – because everyone – there's always, oh, these are the players who weren't drafted. They're on the rosters right now. Mm-hmm. If you gave another pick and said, okay, you guys are now in the D-League, you would get a lot more people getting excited in the D-League, and it becomes more of a viable option.
Okay, we're gonna be closing it out. We're gonna get to some miscellaneous topics. I'll start off with one, and I definitely noticed it for the recent opening of the season. I just absolutely can't stand it. I understand why, because they want to increase jersey sales by having different color schemes out there. I do not like the fact that teams wear their road color jerseys at home. I hate it. And I think that they should have it even in the regular season where you have to wear your light colored jerseys at home.
That's just really nitpicky.
I know it is. That's why it's miscellaneous.
Players can wear whatever jerseys as they want as long as they're not long sleeve.
It just bugs me because it's not like hockey. Like, hockey flipped it. Like, it used to be the other way, and now it's where the dark jersey is the home and the light one is the road. And now it's to the point with the NBA where I don't remember who's on the road and who's at home anymore, just by judging by watching the jerseys if I'm not paying attention to the actual decals on the court.
Well, the NBA is, they wear their alternate third jersey a ton of times too. It's not just like one special game, so it's who even knows who's, but it's just whatever. They can as, you know, the jersey issue is more of, when are they going to start putting sponsors on them?
That's happening soon.
Yeah, I'm like, when are my Celtics going to become the Pepsi Celtics or the, you know?
Well, you know what they're doing now? They're putting the trophies on the back jerseys to represent how many times they've won it.
Oh, yeah, that's just
So the Boston Celtics are going to have, like, a million of them.
You know, it's just the colors they wear is really whatever.
You had an idea about, and obviously this idea got shot down with the draft and trying to help the lottery out by having equal percentage chance for teams that don't make the playoffs to win, instead of having teams with worser records get better percentage. But you have a better idea.
I just think it'd be funny just to have a crazy thing. Why not just have a tournament for, like, the worst? People love tournaments here. I don't know why. People
90s just, tournament, placetobenation.com.
People just love things in brackets. So why not put the worst four teams and have a four-team bracket for the number one pick? If you win the tournament, you deserve the number one pick. You shouldn't be rewarded for tanking. If you
I like it the other way. I think you should lose on purpose, and the loser gets it.
No, you shouldn't win. Like, oh, you win to get the you win the right to get the second pick. Oh, you know, I'm also I like the hockey. Doesn't hockey have a draft rule where you can only move up five positions?
I'm not sure about that.
Have something weird like that, but I think it would just be fun just to have the worst teams and people wanting to win the worst pick. Because it gives, you know, it just gives people.
But what about the drama of your coach telling you that you have to basically log it?
Yeah, but I don't know.
That'd be awesome. And he said, no, I want to win. No, you have to lose.
But yeah, that's why you want to win the number one pick. You don't want to fall backwards because you're just terribly bad. Like, oh, you're bad, and you know the funny, yes. You know, Cleveland.
Oh, I'm with you. It's the gag's over. I do believe that you got to win to get the number one spot.
Yeah, I just think it'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's just crazy.
Would you do that? Like, say you could do that maybe like in the in between days where they don't have playoff games and just have like a 2-team tournament.
Just have a one game, number two seeds and number one, the second worst.
Now, where would you host it, though?
The worst team, obviously. Whoever tanks the most.
No, you can have it in Vancouver since they don't have a team anymore.
Or Vegas. Everyone loves Vegas.
Yeah, in Vegas, and they can put the betting lines on who's gonna lose by the most points.
Since
Adam Silver's not scared of betting, he said so himself.
Well, it's not going to change the game too much.
Mm-hmm.
Because the player's already making it's not like back in the day where nobody made money and, hey, you want to take a dive for $100,000? We're like, well, you know, I already make $10 million a year. I don't need your money.
These are going to be our final two, but these are more of a kind of like a hypothetical, and we don't have an answer. There'll never be an answer, but we're going to try to do it as best as we can. Is there any way that the NBA can either influence or the players can change their mannerisms in order to create more of an offense in which it's not predicated on either hero ball, high ball screens, or highly predictable offense in which the star player always handles the ball? Basically forcing it out of the superstar's hands.
No, there's no possible way because the same thing is done in college with the same thing is done in youth basketball. It's just all... It is what it is. There's no new development
of
any
NBA. But that's the point, trying to get them out of the AAU system, which is detrimental.
There's no other NBA strategy. There's been no revolutionary new system in the NBA in how many years?
The Spurs are more of an anomaly than a revolution.
They're just a team-oriented thing.
And you can't copy that.
But that's just the same thing you have that in college. You'll have, like, you know, the Princeton offense. There's no superstar in that team. Mm-hmm. There are teams that are, but just for the most part, you play to your strengths, and that's what you have, you know, a lot of teams with just one superstar. Okay, he's the one that has to get the ball.
And there's obviously no way with the defensive rules where you can try to influence it in which not necessarily a superstar player, you can't stereotype him that way, but where a player is going to have to work a little harder in order to get his shot instead of basically holding it, isolating, and then going to the hole.
Well, that's just build better defensive players.
Or build better defensive schemes, which is not happening anymore because the rules have been dictated for offenses.
Yeah, well, because offense puts people in the seats. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to see a 78-72 game.
Yeah, business getting in the way of style of play. But that one was for the better, but I think it might backfire on them in the future. But that's just my opinion. The last one, and this is a big one, and you and I have talked about it forever, and I think we're going to talk about it for years. Where are the rivalries? How do you break up the NBA buddy system?
That's gone because they're all professionals.
Mm-hmm.
They're all playing on Team USA. They all hang out. There's no bad blood like there used to
be
back
in the day. Twitter buds. They all do Snapchat.
Yeah, they all do, you know, each other's charity events. It's not like, oh, man, there's no rivalry because they're all, you know, they all change teams.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to build a rivalry with, let's say, Cleveland, all of a sudden LeBron's in Miami? Well, what happened to your Cleveland rivalry? Oh, they're horrible now. There's no rivalry. It's just, you know, the only rivalry is the only team you're playing in the playoffs. That's your only rival because you have to play them, you know, 4 to 7 times.
But doesn't it feel synthetic? It doesn't feel like something organic that builds over a course of years. It's almost like a flash rivalry. Like, oh, here's your rival for 2 years. Okay, that window's closed. Where's your new rival? Oh, here he is. Okay, it's gone now. It just doesn't feel like something that rolls along and stays consistent. And that's what bothers me the most about that. We obviously saw that in Miami. Boston was the challenger. It was a good bitter challenger for them. They're gone. Then it's the Pacers. They're gone. The Spurs went to play them twice in the finals, but they didn't feel like a rivalry, you know?
Yeah, but because that's just because it's just over. Like, there's players come from all over now.
Everyone's hugging when the series is over. There's no bitterness. I'm not saying that I want players to hate each other again. That's why we got into the Artest mess in the first place. But I do want to see playoff basketball in which not everybody is best freaking friends.
But, and then you get that in playoffs, but not, you know, I think you're looking for just more general rivalries. Like, regular season, nobody cares about anymore.
Well, it's just all... Well, they used to, though. They used to watch things to say, like, Knicks Heat. As much as I hated those games, I did like watching the bad blood.
Yeah, but let's just save it for playoffs, and let's, you know, okay, Washington and Chicago sort of has one now, but that's just the way the playoffs have sort of fallen to those two teams.
My main premise is there any way to reinfuse the bad blood into the NBA without bringing back a lot of bad apples? Like,
no.
Like rock fights, defensive struggles, physical altercations and such.
No, there's no more goons in the NBA. There's no more just thugs and... You know, the Bill Laimbeers wouldn't make it like 2 seasons without being kicked out.
He could shoot threes, though.
That's when you just have to become sort of just this, you know, deflated 3-point shooter
guy.
He'd
be Matt Bonner.
Yeah, he'd have no, you know, there'd be no attitude in him because it's just the style of play has changed. It's a lot different now.
But is it for the better because offense is up, or is it for the worse because it's become more predictable?
I wouldn't say it's for the worst because if you're going to watch your team, it's not just like, oh, I'm going to watch it because they're playing their rival. It's just, I'm going to watch it because they're playing, period.
Mm-hmm. So,
but, you know, with all the rivalries, the only thing you could really do, I guess, is just sort of redo the divisions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you would do it, but...
You know what? I'll throw you one more and we'll close it. I totally forgot about this one. What about the idea of... mixing up all the conferences and doing best of 16 instead of doing 2 best of 8s.
Then what's the point of having divisions?
Well, what's the point of having conferences?
Yeah, that's just really, why not just go to the Premier League in London, in Britain, where you have all 20 teams in the same thing. You have one big table of all the teams.
A hodgepodge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not for that or against it. It just would be hard for the casual follower to follow it.
Mm-hmm. So obviously rivalries are basically over in the NBA, sadly. And this podcast is over, sadly, I would say, huh?
No, we had some good discussion on this one.
Yeah. You know, we didn't make all the rules. You know, we try to break them. What does Shawn Michaels say? He says, you make the rules and we will break them. But, we didn't. We had a few of them that we agree on, but like we already said from the top, there's a lot of things that the NBA does that we already like, but there's a few little bit of tinkers here and there that we think that they could work on, and I hope the discussion that we had is something that's insightful for you as the fan and as the listener to listen to. So that's going to be doing it for this episode. I'm sorry, Bill Bellamy. I know you were awesome in Rock and Jock, but I don't think the 4-point line is going to make it.
Pretty soon, 25-point shot, 25 feet in the air.
Well, they're trying it already. Well, you know what? You know what? Antoine Walker, your best friend, famously said. He said, "Why do you only shoot threes?" He said, "Because I can't shoot fours." So, on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. We're gonna catch you on the bounce, guys. We'll talk to you again later.